Hi there, Gemma here. If you're enjoying our podcast, then please do come along and put your name down on the wait list for our Schema Circle. And that way you'll hear when we next open the doors for new members to join. The Schema Circle is really our passion project, and it's our online schema coaching membership program. There's nothing really quite like it. It's new and innovative, and we just love it. Now, there's a huge library of content waiting for you already inside. We also continue to do 3 live Q&A coaching calls every month. Now, everything is recorded, of course, and ready for you to view at your own pace. If you're looking for, a unique way to understand yourself better and to make real change, then I do invite you to come and have a look. Go to theredflagproject.com.au/SC. Now, the Schema Circle isn't therapy, but it's a great accompaniment to your own therapy journey. It's also a great resource for therapists and coaches and for anybody, men and women, wanting to know more about schemas and how we can use this fantastic model to empower ourselves to make actual changes, the changes we want in our life. Now, it's currently housed on our Red Flag website, and just click the link below to read all about it. I hope to see you inside one day. You're listening to the Good Mood Clinic podcast with Drs. Justine Corrie and Gemma Gladstone. We're 2 clinical psychologists and schema therapists with a passion for helping people get to the heart of the matter, to find out what's really going on and to help break unhelpful life patterns. In this podcast, we'll take an in-depth look at the common issues our clients bring to therapy and hope to offer you some useful new ways to think about your life and the people in it. So stay with us. We hope you enjoy this episode. Well, hello, lovely listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Good Mood Clinic podcast. My name's Gemma Gladstone. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Justine, and we are continuing on talking about the theme of romantic breakups. Mm-hmm. So, Justine, as you know, everyone, we're in Sydney, so we're heading into the beginning of the 3rd week of lockdown in Sydney.
Yep, 3rd week of lockdown.
How are you going with that?
Yeah, look, I think like everyone, 2 weeks you can kind of do-ish, and then now I'm looking at the next 2 weeks going, okay, things, it is quite sometimes difficult being at home with everyone all the time.
Yeah.
Quarantine can be very intense.
I think that, totally different people will have their different, struggles with it or the things that make it hard for them. But certainly, school holidays are ended now. So the working combo and, homeschooling combination together is challenging.
Very challenging. And I think the kids, just because they're not able to do their usual activities and have their normal outlets, even just normal exercise, it's just they don't move their bodies as much, so they get more antsy. Yeah. So, I've had a few sort of, trying to just get them on board to help a bit around the house. It's kind of like Lord of the Flies the other night in my kitchen with the dishwasher. it's just lots of conflict.
Yeah. What was happening with the dishwasher?
Oh, just normal arguing over who was going to do what and not be wanting to be left with the pots or, thinking, wow, this is just so exacerbated from people not having, all of us not having our normal outlets. Small things become big things.
Yes. Did you tell them they should be grateful that they've got a dishwasher? Did you go that line?
It was like on the tip of my tongue.
Oh.
Because, you just go, you sort of want it to calm down because then you get stressed, It's just, it's just very hard to stay in your window of tolerance in these situations. And so, I didn't have my emotion coaching hat on that moment, so I had to take a quick break and just go into my panic room, I call it. Just lock the door and take a few slow breaths.
Yes.
So I could, then go and be the healthy adult mode, not become one of the children.
Yeah.
So, it's really challenging. So thinking of you all out there who are, sort of in the same boat and having to kind of stay in your own window of tolerance and try and keep your children in their window of tolerance and everything's not as it normally is.
Mm.
Very difficult.
Exactly. If anybody's got any tips on, how do you get your child to know that, mum and dad can still do the homeschooling, you don't just need the teacher in the classroom.
It's like, not that I think I can, but, you know, oh, gosh, that's a battle.
Oh, totally, because the environment just doesn't propel them through the work, you know, like all the other kids doing as they're told. And like,
it's, they need their classmates sitting there on the table. Yes. And, you know, if they don't have that, it's like, oh, gosh, it's hard.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, that's our whinge.
That's our whinge.
End of rant.
End of rant.
Now on to today's show. So just to remind you what we've been talking about so far, in episode 30, we were discussing the fact that the abandonment schema can make our breakup just so much more painful, and it can really exaggerate the pain of the breakup, regardless of how long we've known the person, right? Whether it was just a very brief thing or whether it was a long thing. And so we really got into that in episode 30. So if you haven't listened so far and you're interested in that, please check that out. Then in episode 31, we really talked about when the writing's on the wall and you know you have to call it quits, then what gets in the way of leaving the relationship? And so we got into that in more detail, and we talked about schemas particularly in that one. And then today we're continuing on because this is a topic that causes so many people so much angst and heartache and rumination, and they wonder what's going on with themselves. And that's you've probably experienced it. I think we all have, haven't we? And that's when you seem to not be able to stop thinking about your ex. You just can't get that person out of your mind, whether you've been the person who's been broken up with or you've done the breaking up. No matter how long the relationship, perhaps it's just a short one or perhaps it's a long term, but for some reason, you're really still very emotionally invested. You can't get your head around it. You just can't get over that ex. Do you know what I'm talking about, Justine?
Totally. Yeah, we've all been there before, you know, if you've got an abandonment schema. Once again, this rears its head again in this part of a breakup. Mm. And this would be responsible for quite a few hours of therapy, actually, because people find it really distressing and confusing as to why they are still preoccupied with the person. And that can be whether they've broken up with them or whether the other person's broken up with you. You can find yourself ruminating, you know, incessantly thinking about and even dreaming about your ex-partner. And it may be at a point where even friends and family are getting a bit frustrated with you that you still haven't sort of, you know, inverted commas, moved on. And so you're in a bit of flack.
Yeah. It's kind of like the eye roll that a couple of people will give each other when such and such, oh, you know, Mary's still talking about him and eye roll.
Yeah, totally.
Isn't she over him yet? Well, I would just shut up and stop talking about the ex-partner. So, you know, the people around you can get really sick of it. But for you, you feel like you're really caught in this, it's almost compulsive sort of this loop that you feel like you just can't break free from.
Yeah.
You said that it would constitute several hours of therapy. Do you have clients coming along with this particular issue?
Yeah, totally. Like, and it can be, you know, the relationship can actually be quite a short one. It may just have been a few dates even, or it may be a long relationship. So the length of time doesn't matter too much because it's, as we all know, it's all about schemas and schema activation and schemas being triggered so that they add another layer of emotional suffering to something that's already hard. And if you don't know about your schemas and understand how they get triggered and how it happens for you, it can be really distressing and very confusing. So that's what I thought we'd do today. Hey, Gemma, we would just sort of take you through a few ways that your schemas can trip you up in this part of a breakup, because sometimes if you can observe it and understand it in that way, it can help you sort of step back from what's going on and maybe not judge yourself so harshly, because it's sort of, you know, your scheme is being triggered outside your control, but what you can do is choose how you respond to it.
That's right. Yep, totally. And I think getting some insight, a little bit of knowledge is power. Or it can help us not be so hard on ourselves.
Yeah, very soothing. Yeah, a lot of shame, you know, what's wrong with me? Everyone else seems to move on or he's moved on already, you know. Why am I still preoccupied?
And in this day and age, I think it's harder than ever. I mean, this is an age-old problem, of course. But now with the digital world, we're able to see just how far someone has moved on, whether that's pretended, you know, whether that's real or fictitious, and that doesn't help.
Pops up in your social media feed. Like lots of people get triggered when photos are tagged So sometimes even when they're trying to do the right thing and not, you know, they may not be following them on social media or whatever, a friend of a friend will tag a photo and there it pops up of their ex.
All right. And then they say it anyway, even though they're...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that can sort of give you fresh fuel for your schemas to come up.
Yep.
Yeah. So I've got a bit of a list here of schemas and how they can manifest this sort of preoccupation. And
let's get
the first one I thought was sort of, well, the preoccupation is based on guilt, right? So this often happens if the person, if you've got a self-sacrifice schema and you're used to putting yourself aside and protecting other people's emotions at all costs, and maybe the relationship had that dynamic in it, but for whatever reason it's ended, usually if you've tried to end it, you may feel very guilty about hurting them. And you may even have these sort of quite, you know, sad fantasies about them suffering after the breakup and how you've contributed to that suffering.
So this guilt is, we would imagine, but not always, experienced more by someone who's decided to end it?
Well, I suppose, you know, the context matters, doesn't it? It's more that, you know.
And how you perceive the person as vulnerable.
That's
or
right.
Not is going
that's
to influence right. how much guilt you'll have.
Correct. Yeah. And also, if you sort of took that responsibility to keep them feeling okay, you know, for whatever reason in the relationship, you may sort of, in a way, still carry that responsibility around with you, and you feel like, I actually, you know, is that person okay? You know, God, I've heard of all sorts of, you know, quite sad images, these, you know, you may carry around in your mind about your ex, you know, imagining them alone, sort of drinking or, you know, depressed and not functioning and worried about, you know, whether they're eating well or can they go to work, you know, so they carry around this image in their mind. And each time it sort of intrudes into awareness, this image, they get a fresh flush of guilt,
yes. right?
So even though that decision to move on from the relationship is a good one, you know, you may be okay with that intellectually. Emotionally, you're still in a relationship with that person because you're still feeling this responsibility that, you know, you don't actually have any, logically speaking.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating one there that you've raised, because just in and of itself, it is so, there's so many layers, so in depth. Like, I'm just thinking, and that also has particular functions. You know, like having that type of belief that this person without me is basically now a homeless person on the street,
drinking
themselves to death and won't survive without me, although distressing, may serve a function for the person.
What do you reckon?
Well, you know, it certainly keeps the schema alive, doesn't it? That I am the one that is responsible for others and that needs to take care of them. And without me, people will suffer terribly. And so it's not very healthy, but could be also somewhat validating. You know, it's reinforcing. It's like, yeah, they do need me. And so it provides an excuse to engage with the relationship again, maybe get back with the ex when you've already made a healthy decision to leave. It could really compromise your behavior going forward. You know, you might find that you're not even questioning those stories that pop up. You're just identifying with them. You're surrendering to that story of, without me, this person is, you know, totally a wreck. And you're really colluding with that story. And that doesn't help you. And it doesn't really help the person, because, of course, if you went back for that reason, you wouldn't be very authentic. So this is a real example of someone being really inauthentic in terms of how they really think and feel. And that kind of flips a bit over into the martyr zone, doesn't it?
Can do, yeah, definitely.
It can do.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking, you know, with that one, it is a bit complicated, because sometimes, you know, it could be partly true. The person that you've been in relationship with might actually have been inducing the guilt.
Yeah.
Right? That, please don't leave me. I'll never meet anybody without you. I'll never this and that. You know, my life will be miserable. So you could have actual messages from the other, or it could just be all your own stuff and there'd be no such thing that. So it's a big one. It's worth thinking about if you're feeling guilt, because there's a number of ways you could view it.
There is, and it's you. I mean, obviously this has its origins in childhood. If you were given a lot of validation and acceptance for being someone who stepped in and sorted things out for your parent, you know, yeah, lots of ways that can happen. And you get this sense of, I called it like, you're this omnipotent carer, like you're actually quite this powerful person who can come in and take away other people's suffering. So, yeah, and now obviously there's a lot of self-development in stepping away from that role and what that means for your sense of self and as a person.
Yeah, but challenging, challenging.
Very difficult. Challenging, but it can definitely make this particular trigger hard, you know, so recovery from a breakup. So you have to be really mindful about what stories you're telling yourself about how the other person is and what your role is. You know, I always say to people, you can't help the other person get over their breakup if you're the one who's the ex, you know, like you can't.
Right. You can't be that role for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that sort of thing about, oh, I could be their friend. Well, actually, I mean, look, I won't say that never happens, but I always say to people, you can't be someone's friend until you're completely fine with them being with someone else. Mm-hmm. That's when it's just a platonic friendship. And you usually can't do that, you know, soon after a breakup.
No, you need time. You need after a breakup, people need time to get that disconnection and to sort of reinvest your energies into yourself rather than the person.
Yeah.
And you need time to heal. And so this kind of premature, well, let's just move into a friendship, or I'll help this person get over it by being there all the time, is not going to be really helpful in terms of the moving on or getting both parties to a better place.
Yeah. So guilt. So that's based on a sort of a self-sacrificing schema as one potential pathway to finding it hard to let go of your ex.
Feeling responsible, yes.
Feeling responsible. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now another one. This is one of our favourite topics, Gemma, the abandonment schema.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yep. So obviously breakups are always hard when you've got an abandonment schema, and your abandonment schema can also drive rumination post-breakup in lots of ways. Have you seen that in your clients, Gem?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think because when you do have a strong abandonment schema and you've broken up, well, it's such a big topic, Justine, my mind's going in all different directions, but the rumination could be about different things. You know, for example, if you've been broken up, if you've been rejected and you're trying to get over a breakup and you've got an abandonment schema, it's very painful. And this can give rise to ruminations around, you know, what have I done? I'm not good enough. I should have, if only I was sort of better, this person would have liked me, and now I'm going to be alone and I'll never meet anybody ever again. And it can, that separation, like we talked about last time in episode 30, that separation feeling can feel very permanent, and it can make us feel like this is it. We won't meet someone else. This is the person we've lost, is the person, and has those specific qualities. And there will be no, I won't be able to replicate any of those good feelings with anyone else. And of course, if you do have a strong abandonment schema, the story goes, and I'll be alone in the end. Forever. This is just the way it is. I'll never meet anybody again. My partners will always prefer someone else, and they won't choose me. I'll sort of won't. Yeah. And so you can get very stuck in, and that's a negative spiral of depressive rumination, particularly if it taps into what have I done, you know? But that again taps into an exaggerated self of a sense of self-responsibility, you know, owning it completely.
If only I'd been
different. Yeah, I'm the defective one. If only I'd been different, then this person would not have rejected me. And again, a story that your schema or schemas are telling you, and engaging in that rumination is essentially, what's the function of it? You know, I mean, for me, the function of those, they're alluring, aren't they? Don't you find your clients sort of feel like they can't help themselves?
They can't help themselves.
They're making a cup of tea and they've got those fantasies. They're having a shower. Those fantasies are intruding in everything that they do. And before you know it, you're deep down into that fantasy, no matter what the fantasy or rumination is. And so you've got to be really careful of that.
Are you a woman currently going through a breakup? Is the pain of the breakup interfering with your ability to live your best life? If this is you, then you'll want to get a copy of Justine and Gemma's Breakup Guide. The Red Flag Project Breakup Guide will provide you with the practical advice and psychological support you'll need as you navigate the emotional ups and downs of a breakup. Taking care of yourself and your future self will be much easier with the support you'll get from this step-by-step companion resource. You'll find a link in the show notes, which will take you straight to the breakup guide for more information. Or you can go to goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG. That's goodmoodclinic.com.au/RFP-BUG.
I often think it's, because your abandonment schema, it's about I can't survive on my own, if you really dial it down, going back to that small child being alone in the world. So if you think about it, if that part of you is triggered in a situation, you're going to be very preoccupied with trying to, even emotionally, mentally be close to that person in your mind so you can get mm-hmm. a sense of emotional safety again. So I think mm-hmm. it's sort of a unhelpful way of even trying to stay connected to the person.
Right.
To get rid of the terror or the anxiety of being on your own.
Right, yes. Because the attachment system has been so disrupted with a breakup. We're like a small child who, apart from what we've discussed before, we're just in normal attachment. When that happens, we feel like the rug, has been pulled out from under us and now we're scrambling for safety.
Yes.
Where's my secure base? Where's my safe base?
Yeah.
And so that fuels the behavior of perhaps looking photos of your ex, following them on social media to get that hit of connection.
Yeah. And even it's like you can't be with them. So you kind of maintain this connection in your mind because that's better than the pain, as you're saying, of the abandonment.
We're taking away the pain. And even looking at a photo of someone helps to take away the pain.
Totally. And for a millisecond.
Yeah, and that's what a person is doing, probably not consciously, trying to soothe, trying to feel better. They're just trying to get that need met for connection. And so usually when you're feeling more vulnerable, you'd be inclined to do that, would you say? That's why we don't want to probably, we want to do a lot of healthy things after a breakup, but that's not always possible. So I think it's also really useful for people to know that when we do ruminate, if we think about what that is, like if we do ruminate and worry and go over stories, we have a lot of imagery when we do that. Usually like imagining the conversation, imagining a reunion or imagining getting back together, lots of stories and lots of cognition. So we have lots of mental processes and all of those sorts of things. When we do that, it's like throwing buckets of fuel on the fire, because we know that about rumination. The more you do it, the more you get hooked, the more that neural pathway gets hardened, and not hardened, but well established, just like walking through the bush track. It's a well-worn bush track.
Mm.
And that's what I meant before when I said it's alluring. It's like you're in a rumination and you don't even know how you got there because you've just been going with it. Anyway, the more you do that, it inhibits emotion. So if we just let ourselves feel it sometimes, we'll be less inclined to go down those tracks of rumination. We've essentially got to feel the pain of any relationship breakup in order to move through it.
Mm.
There's no easy way out.
And just, those abandonment fantasies, so those are sort of positive ones, imagining ruminations. And then there's the negative ones where you sort of imagine them being with another person.
Mm.
They're sort of really distressing ones. Now, one of the things about an abandonment scheme is, that the person you care about will leave you for someone else, that they will.
Yep.
So it's like the schema is taking your current story of abandonment and just putting the new characters in, current ex and the person you're imagining them with. And then that's actually very, very traumatizing.
Mm.
Now, if you're unaware that the role your own abandonment scheme is playing in that, that can be hellish for a long time if you keep those fantasies going.
Mm.
Now you can't control whether they pop up or not, but what you were saying is you can, it's really important the story you start telling yourself about why they're there and what's actually going on.
Yes. Are you saying that if you have these stories, like, for example, you would then confirm that by saying, and I'm having this story about my ex because I need to be back with him,
yeah,
for example?
Yeah.
Right. Or something like that.
Or like, You know, it's just a familiar path in a way to imagine your attachment figure. Now, obviously, the original one was some sort of parent or caregiver, but now it's your partners, your intimate partners, but your caregiver being with someone else or preferring someone else, prioritizing something else over you.
Mm.
That's just what you assume is happening. Now, I mean, it may or may not be happening, but it's just a very familiar way of understanding what's going on that you've been doing since you're a little person.
Yes, yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the, you know, and for those of you who are listening to that and you're not quite fully understanding what we're talking about, we've repeated this theme around abandonment and the origins of abandonment in several past episodes.
Yeah.
So, you know, check that out. We've gone over that quite a bit and talked about the abandoned child and how strong that pull is and how much this is related to those early times. We just don't suddenly develop an abandonment schema midlife.
Not yeah, so it isn't all about the person you're with.
Sure.
Right now,
yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
No, that's right. That's what we're talking about in the episode 30. You know, it's not just you who's being abandoned, but it's all the parts of you that have come before that is feeling the pain of the abandonment, primarily the wounded, abandoned child.
Yeah.
It's really interesting when you know, you said that, you know, like at the heart of it is this little, like, my attachment person is going to prefer someone else over me. And of course, that it's very complicated in adult intimate relationships because that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Horrible. I mean, confirming event.
If you see your ex on social media and they're, you know, not that you know what they're thinking or feeling, of course, but if you see a picture of them portrayed with a new partner having a wonderful time on the beach or wherever at a party or wherever that might be, they're with another partner. That's the reality of it, you know.
Yeah, that's normal.
But this, we don't want to project all our old stuff and our old pain onto this other person. Mm. This other person is just your average punter who is not your parent, who is full of flaws like everyone else, who never signed up to meet all your needs in the first place, who's got all their own schemas and who's not going to make you happy.
Yeah.
And that's the hard realization of adult relationships. Very different from, you know, in the first few years of our life, our parent is supposed to be there for us all the time, you know, and drop everything for us. Not so in adult relationships. So we've got to be able to see that for what that is and realize that this guy you see in that photo is, you know, he wasn't the person made for you on this earth. He's not your soulmate, if that exists, and he's not here to be the parent that you didn't have. And there were good reasons. And if you really reflect, you realize that there were probably lots of red flags and times where that person didn't meet your needs.
Mm.
It wasn't the partner for you, if you're really honest with yourself. But when you're down and when you're feeling vulnerable, your mind will tell you that story.
I think you've just probably triggered lots of abandonment schemas, Gemma.
I have. But the point I'm trying to make, and we've all been there, and that's life and that's relationships. And that's, if you don't get into the swim of a relationship, if you always avoid relationships, you'll never have the opportunity to heal your abandonment schema. So, that might get people thinking, wow, I need to get some help around these issues because I am finding it really difficult to separate from this ex, even though my rational, healthy adult mind knows that he wasn't the person for me, you know.
And actually that reminds you of something that you often see. So when you're in that particular state of mind, completely abandoned, you know, you kind of idealize the person, you know, and you kind of tell yourself how they were the one that got away and they might be your soulmate and you ever feel this way about the person and you had this magical special connection, you know, so it's usually something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And even though a couple of weeks ago you may have really seen the reality of the relationship, so you know, you've got quite a conflicted view on what's going on. But when you're in that abandoned mode, I don't know if you've got this experience when you sit with clients, it's like, oh, wow, this person is now completely seeing this from a sort of fantasy perspective about what this person meant. Because when I saw this person 2 weeks ago, we were having this quite sort of, you know, frank discussion about red flags and what needs weren't being met and, you know, how they weren't probably going to be a great partner. But then when they're in that particular state of mind, they are not seeing it that way at all.
Mm, totally. And that's the good thing and the empowering thing about schema therapy and about schema mode therapy is that we have different parts of ourselves And we can have a very rational part that goes, you know what, in my cooler moments, I know this person wasn't for me. And there's many reasons why they were not for me. And there's many reasons why I should remove my energies from focusing on this person into something healthier and all of that, blah, blah, yada, yada. There's all of those reasons. And another time, when you're feeling more vulnerable, your vulnerable child moan will be dominant. The abandoned part of you will be dominant. And that is the consciousness of the little abandoned child. And that's a part of you still. And that's normal. And that's there. We can heal and we can do lots with that part. And you have to treat that with a lot of kindness, not dismissal, not disregard, but, you know, kindness. You have to realize that, yes, I'm feeling that pain and I need to be very kind and soothing and recognize that that's real. But there's also a balance there. And we can't do that on our own, obviously, Justine. I mean, we need help with that, right?
Yeah, you need someone to help you observe all your different modes and states of mind so that you can develop a part of you that's able to do that too. And I was just thinking with clients, sometimes what I do is when they're in their healthy adult mode and, you know, so going in between that part of you that can see the real reality of the relationship and see it for what it was, i.e. probably not something that was going to go the distance for whatever reason, and then the part of you that's abandoned, you can be in and out of that all the time. Like you can feel like you're in a bit of a washing machine, you know? And so what I'll say is, hey, you know, you're in this mode now. Do you mind if I write a few key phrases down that you've said? And then next time you're in that mode, if you come in, we can talk about them so that they can actually hear. Because when they're in the child mode, sometimes people can't even access that part of themselves that was thinking differently about the relationship. That's how consuming and overwhelming the pain is.
And that's how sort of cut off it is as well, you know.
So, and that's why it's hard to get out of it. So this is why you end up stuck ruminating, you know, after a relationship. You kind of spend this, you know, a lot of your time in this really vulnerable mode, idealizing this person, trying to be close to them again. Even in fantasy. So it's tough, but you can get on top of it.
The idealization is the fantasy.
Totally.
Yeah, because they weren't the ideal person to begin with. Yeah. And we're not wrong for wanting that.
No.
But they weren't that person.
No. It's also particularly hard if there was a lot of sexual chemistry as well, if that was a very heightened part of the relationship. So that's why even very short-term relationships can create this response. Because you feel extremely connected and relieved when, you know, that whole push-pull thing I've spoken about before. And so you're wanting that fix again when you're feeling separate from them. You're wanting to feel that intimacy and closeness that they gave you a glimpse of before they withdraw it. So
totally.
It can be very, very difficult.
I remember having a very, very strong breakup feeling from a guy that I had a lot of high chemistry with that I didn't really know very well as a person and didn't know him very long. And it was originally a bit of a ghosting situation. So short thing, didn't hear from him, then he reappeared. And then I took him back on, another short, very short thing. And then when that finished, I felt very bereft and was really in the thick of that, you know, despairing, vulnerable child, abandoned place where nothing could lift me out of it. I remember going to the movies and I was just sitting through this movie thinking, whatever.
All the colour is leached out of your world.
Yeah, nothing matters. Who cares? Nothing's important, you know. Nothing was touching the sides. It was just, you know, and that's pain and suffering. But what we want to do is what I'm saying in those moments, what we want to do is we want to try to resist, if we can, the allure of going into the fantasy of that person and more tend to our own suffering, right? Because that other person doesn't matter, right? And particularly in my case, he really didn't matter because, like, I didn't even know this guy that well, you know what I mean, at any depth, right? And on paper, probably not a great match, but there was chemistry, right? So I'm not talking about someone you've had a 15-year relationship or a 10-year relationship. You know, I mean, every relationship is different. But often it is your own pain that you have to attend with and the origin of that pain, and that's the trigger. That's that vulnerable child saying, I'm here. I need to be seen. I need to be heard. Please don't forget about me again. Don't push me away. Attend to me. Feel my grief. And so the longer you keep ruminating about old, you know, whoever over here, you avoid touching the real stuff. And if we keep avoiding touching the real stuff, which is our primary wounds, you know, many times, and our early abandonment, our earlier grief and loss and stuff around our attachment as child, then we never change, we never move, we never heal. So the breakup, as painful as they can be, are often bring us just drastically in touch with the part of us who needs our love and our healing and our recognition most. And so that's what I meant when I was talking about that before.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dr. Gemma Gladstone, clinical psychologist and certified schema therapist. You know, working with Justine Corrie over the years in clinical practice, we have had the fortunate experience of working with hundreds of women and being able to help them work through a particular issue. These women have struggled to identify early warning signs when dating and entering new relationships with men. But if they've been able to spot certain signs earlier and make decisions, say, not to pursue a guy or to end something early, then they would have actually saved themselves precious months of heartache and potentially years of precious time. So we developed the Red Flag Project, an online course for these types of women. So who exactly is it for? Well, this course is for women with a pattern of getting involved with, say, emotionally unavailable men, including those subgroup of men who become controlling, possessive, and harmful down the track. This course is really for any woman trying to navigate the dating world and wanting guidance on how to not waste time with dates who are unavailable, inconsistent, avoidant, detached, narcissistic, or controlling for whatever reason. So if you have difficulty setting healthy boundaries and you find it really difficult or hard to read the signs, to trust your judgment and to judge the behavior of a date or your partner early in a relationship, then you will definitely benefit from this course. You know, many of our clients with this pattern have literally found themselves embroiled with these types of men over and over again. Now, we know this, and we know this at a heartfelt level because both of us had this pattern and we lived through the frustration and the hopelessness associated with it. And we used schema therapy and our own healing to overcome it. So we've chosen to focus on women for this particular course simply because we've worked with so many of you, so many women hugely affected by this issue. And we want to make a real preventative difference in the lives of these women who, by their own self-disclosure, identify with this pattern. So check it out. It's called the Red Flag Project. And go to our website, goodmood.com.au.
And that's a hard transition to make because the vulnerable child, that part of you is used to getting an external person or wants an external person to soothe them, which is a normal thing to want as a little person. And
yeah, and you can have help from external.
Yes.
You know, I'm not saying sit alone in your apartment. I'm saying get some help with that. You know,
yeah.
A friend who's not going to minimize it, a therapist, podcasts like this, you know, books, Reinventing Your Life, or other books around abandonment. You know, there's lots of different things you can do as well. And you need help to someone to help you walk out of that pain after you've been in there and know what it's about.
Yeah. Important thing. Yeah. Someone who's okay with the pain and you've seen it in a different way.
Yeah.
So we've spoken about guilt. We've spoken about abandonment. You've mentioned also linked to abandonment, that defectiveness schema can also be triggered. Another way I was thinking, or what I've seen in terms of defectiveness, is the person who you were with, the person you've broken up with, something about them made you feel good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they tick some boxes in your mind about the type of person who you always thought you'd be with, and that person reflected well on you for whatever reason.
Yes. I've seen that in clients. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And then the part of you that then gets triggered is that probably the inner critic or that vulnerable part that just feels that now you're not good enough again because you don't have that person around to lift you up and that you may not ever find that again.
Mm. So having that person who was somehow really a wow factor or special, yes, reinforced this or validated my sense of worth.
Yeah.
That if he could be with me or she could be with me, that meant I was okay.
They chose me.
Right. They chose me. I feel, yeah, I'm good enough. So, but without that person, I'm not good enough. And that's where all these schemas, you know, overlap, you know, because we see a lot of schemas in that, you know, core worth, defectiveness, abandonment, all sorts of things. So they, yeah, but that's one I've definitely heard clients say to me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So schemas comp together and, but the way out of them is always the same. You know, I suppose you being willing to look at that pain and have it in your body long enough, you know, for you to kind of understand it in a different way and deal with it, you know, with help, but also take responsibility for it in yourself rather than wanting someone else to come and take it away for you.
Yeah, i.e. the other person.
The other person.
The person that you broke
the ideal with. Partner. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a process. I mean, what we're Justine and I are talking about now in this succinct episode is something that you might work on with a therapist for a long time. You know, this is not quick fix kind of stuff, really, but it is helpful to get the insight into that's more than just what's going on in the surface. What are some, I feel like now that you've told me I've triggered everybody's abandonment schema, I'm feeling really guilty. And now I'm really feeling really guilty. So now I'm feeling the urge to fix it.
So how would you do that, Gemma?
I can't. I can't fix it, but we can give some tips.
We can give some tips. Yeah.
But, you know, and I think, you know, this is human suffering, okay? Like we've all been in it at various points in our life, and that's part of the common human experience, loss and pain and heartache, you know, and people reject us, not just in relationships, but in other areas of life as well.
Totally. Mm. Yeah, can't escape it.
So
find another way to be with it.
Let's finish off with just giving some practical, I mean, first of all, some guidance. I think I would love to recommend the Susan Anderson's work on abandonment.
Oh, yeah, The Journey from Abandonment to Healing.
Yes, and she has a workbook on that as well.
Yes, she does.
So this is, if you're really feeling the strength of your abandonment schema, I recommend that you listen to our podcast on the topic, and you also check out the resources there by Susan Anderson. And the thing about this is it's fluid and we move, right? And we don't stay in this forever, okay?
No, it feels like you will, but
feels
you
like
don't.
You will, but that's emotional logic. Just because something feels like it's going to happen doesn't mean it will, right?
Mm.
So some coping tips. You mentioned it before about the whole social media, but the tagging. So, I mean, I was going to say, we use the example of those pokies. You know, pokies get rich because of intermittent reinforcement scheduling, which means that you don't know when you're going to get the hit. So I can stand, like, I don't play the pokies. In fact, I can't stand gambling. So, you know, pokies are, in my opinion, they're sort of like the lowest form of gambling. So we could stand at the pokies and we could just, you know, put our coins in, our dollars or our credit cards, whatever it is nowadays. And many times we won't get a hit, then we'll get a hit, you know. It's just about we're finished. It's not extinguishing the desire to play the pokies. And all of a sudden, bam, you get a payoff, right? Intermittent rewards are more powerful than consistent rewards or no rewards at all.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we can apply that to healing and getting over your ex, I would say we have to go the no contact path.
No contact, yeah.
Okay. So that means we don't want to see them. This is for a period of time, whatever. We don't want to see them. We don't want to follow them. We don't want to check them out in any way. We don't want to see their name pop up. We don't want to see their number pop up. All of these things are triggers that keep that hit going and keep that little sort of addictive process going.
It's fuel.
What do you think? What do you think about that? So in this, how do you get over the tagging? I have no idea, Justine.
Oh, well, I suppose you can ask friends not to do it, you know, because, you know, often your partner may still be in your social circles. I mean, you can't control it completely.
Yeah, no.
Some people just take a break from social media full stop.
Mm, taking a break, yeah.
Yeah, that can, you know, and actually Gemma and I have written a little book or guide on how to manage a breakup, sort of strategies that you can put in place post-breakup to minimise your suffering. So we'll put the link to that in our show notes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good. That's excellent. It's more than a tip sheet. It's more of a comprehensive manual on coping with a breakup, you know, coping with when if you're doing the breaking up, someone else is breaking up with you, what comes up for you and how some what thing that you can do to help you navigate those really difficult waters. I think that, you know, people always sort of say, oh, you know, when are you going to get closure on, you know, worrying about Jim? You know, you broke up with him 8 months ago. Why are you still thinking about him? Well, sometimes we need to, maybe that tells us that we haven't got out enough of our thoughts or feelings. So we could do things like letter writing. We could do things like, well, we could even do our own little bit of homegrown chair work, Justine, in a safe way, which I recommend to my clients sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, put a photo of Fred in a chair opposite you and just go through the cycle of how you feel. You know, when I look at you, Fred, I feel like really betrayed. Or I feel like, you know, you really used me, or I feel like you were not honest with me and that makes me feel X, Y, and Z. So you can externalize. So, you know, and then once you're finished, don't spend long on that task. It might be 10 minutes. Put that chair away, get the photo of Fred, throw it out. You know, so we need to provide ourselves with opportunities for some externalization. Mm-hmm. So externalization of thoughts, externalization of feelings, whether it's getting it all down in paper, journaling, chair work, a number of sort of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we may need the help of a therapist to help us externalize, right?
Yeah, particularly if you're very distressed.
Particularly if you're distressed and it goes on, and particularly if it's complicated, then I would urge you to actually get help with those things and not do them in isolation. But if it's a simple thing and you feel mainly like you can handle it, then go for it. The other thing I think it's really good to do is give yourself a heavy dose of reality. List the things when you're in your healthy mind state and knowing that, okay, yep, these were the reasons. List them down. List why it didn't work. You know, why didn't it work? Write them down so you can refer to that later. You know, what were the needs you were not getting met? What were the concerns you had about the relationship? And really back yourself, because there's this thing, you know, we get very nostalgic about the past, and there's a bias in psychology. It's not called the nostalgia bias, but it's something like that, when we tend to look to the past and think that it was somehow better than where we are now. Now, we need to realize that that wasn't the case. You know, if you did the breaking up, you did that for a reason. And back yourself on that. And if you were broken up with, there are also going to be a number of reasons why that wasn't working for you. So that comes back to that, you know, it might be helpful to write down that list. You know, and above all, if you're feeling a feeling, feel it. Like all this stuff like rumination and thinking and fantasizing, they just serve the function of blocking feelings. So notice when you're going down the rumination path and try to catch yourself. It's useful if you practice a lot of mindfulness, try to catch yourself, be mindfully aware of, ah, there it is again. I'm starting to think about Fred. I'm starting to remember that holiday we had. Okay, right. I know that's not going to get me anywhere. Back to the present moment. Or what am I actually feeling? Go into the body and focus on what you're actually feeling instead of the thoughts and the fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
And stand back and watch that process for yourself and notice that's what you're doing. Rather than being engaged with it, trying to look at your rumination rather than be part of your rumination. Would you add anything to that?
I would sort of just choose very carefully who you spend time with as you're going through the breakup. So you want to choose people who are very caring and kind and who won't judge you for having all your feelings about a breakup.
Mm.
Because the last thing you need is to feel like you're invalidated, that your experience isn't valid if you're having it, which can, you know, people don't mean to do this, but sometimes if they're uncomfortable with what you're feeling or it looks, you know, very intense, they might say things like, oh, you know, it'll be okay, you know, you'll move on and find someone else. So that more benign sort of dismissiveness actually doesn't help you when you've got the feeling.
Mm.
Actually, you need to feel it, as you say. So yeah, I would just be careful you choose to spend your time with. And if you don't have anyone in your life who you feel can just be okay with how you're feeling, yeah, seek some professional help, because that's the actually feeling your feelings is the quickest way to get through it.
That's right. Yeah. So we would really encourage people to reach out either to trusted people that are not going to be invalidating. And like Justine says, they don't mean to cause, you know, they just want you to feel better, I guess. And by all means, reach out to helplines, Lifeline, or to a therapist, and to get that extra support if you need to. There's nothing wrong with that. We've all been there. So this is probably a good time to wrap up.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a good talk today. We've covered a lot.
We'll have the link to the breakup guide as well. If you've got any questions for us, as always, it's Justine and Gemma at goodmood.com.au. Visit our website, goodmood.com.au, and we will have links to various things in our show notes, including how to access the Red Flag Project, which is our e-course for women, which we've discussed before.
Yeah.
So until next time.
Until next time. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for today. We really enjoyed spending time with you, and we hope that you keep listening. You can visit the podcast page on our website, goodmood.com.au, for more information and to access show notes. Please remember that this podcast is intended for information and learning purposes, and that it shouldn't be used as a substitute for personal therapy. So, please consult a qualified mental health professional for assistance that is tailored to your specific needs. Hope you stay well and take great care of yourself. Bye for now.